Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declarations of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men, as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note, and so far as her citizens of color are concerned, instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that's created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. Man, I'm solo again, you know. DT is still on the continent of Africa, and, you know, he's been posting. I don't know if you're following him, and Richard's nodding, because if you're following DT, he's putting out some amazing photos with the Maasai, and he put out some photos with lions, and, you know, I thought he was even laying down next to one. I'm like, man, is that against the rules? I mean, I know this guy is just, man, he's just over the top. But you know, check out his if you're a friend with him, check him out, and it's amazing to see what's happening, the fun that he's having over there, and the opportunities that he's taking advantage of. It's just a joy to see that. So you're here with Michael Eric Owens. You're here just with me. It's just me and you. I hope you got your favorite drink. I hope you just sitting back and relaxing and just, you know, taking it easy, because we're going to have some fun for the next few minutes or two. And, you know, a blank check. I mean, America has given us so many promises. And so this show, we want to talk about that. Where are we at? Are those promises being fulfilled? Are they broken? Are they the same for everyone? I want to get into that. And I want to, first of all, talk a little bit about last night. We had an event down here in Oklahoma City that the Ralph Ellison Foundation put on, which I'm put a plug in. I'm happy to be the executive director of the Ralph Ellison Foundation, and of course the acclaimed author of the book Invisible Man, one of the 50 greatest books of the 19th century. He's a son born in Oklahoma City. And last night we had a very critical community forum about race and American identity and consciousness, and we had a great turnout. And I'm here to tell you, people are hungry to talk about these issues. They just don't have space. And what was interesting is, I mean, out of our conversation, we had on our panel, one of our panelists was Dr. Janetta Sims from the University of Central Oklahoma. And she talked about how, you know, we're not given permission to speak about these issues. And you think about times where you're on your job and you just don't feel that you can speak, you can open up. And this idea of others controlling what we say and when we say it and how we say it, when we live in this quote unquote, right, free speech, right? We live in a country that tells us that we have free speech. And so it was just, you know, it was generationally diverse. It was also age and gender, as well as race. So it was just a beautiful, beautiful night. And I know we have listeners from all over this world. And I wish you all could come to a Ralph Ellison Forum, but I know that's not possible. But if you are close and you're in Oklahoma City, you need to follow the Ralph Ellison Foundation. You can find out more information about the Ralph Ellison Foundation by going on their Facebook page, or you can also go on RalphEllisonFoundation.org. And for those of you, February 20th will be the third annual Ralph Ellison Foundation Gala, which will be at the History Center, February 20th. Putting a plug in it, buy your tickets. Go to RalphEllisonFoundation.org to buy your tickets. Man, you know, I was reading the other day, and I have to bring this out because, I mean, it's crazy what is happening at Donald Trump's rallies. I have to bring this out because I think we you know, again, when you think it can't get any more weird, it becomes more weird. It becomes appalling, really. And I know some of my listeners are Trump supporters, and they don't like when I get on Trump, man. But come on now. I mean, I can't be the only one that think this, you know, this circus is just getting out of control. And it says that Trump was interrupted several times by protesters shouting slogans supporting gun control and Black Lives Matter, because he actually brought somebody up to the stage that talked about how, I believe, one of their loved ones was killed by an immigrant. And it said, you know, this person that shouted that's why there's need for gun control prompted a furious reaction from the crowd. Some screamed, pointed, and at one point shoved a heckler. You know, they shoved him as hotel security swooped in. And it says that here that, you know, this is because of Jamar Shaw, supporter brought to the stage that recounted his story about an undocumented immigrant gang member shot him while he was walking home. Terrible, terrible tragedy. And the reaction to this protester who shouted, "That's why we need gun control." It says here that as one man was dragged away, people in the crowd variously yelled, "Shoot him, kick his and light the mother." So I don't know, but you know, this is, and then some guy did the Nazi flags, you know, salute, I should say that. I mean, this is crazy. Again, I didn't, you know, I just read what they wrote. And this was according to, of course, ABC News. So this is not any wayward site out there. This is according to a news that we tend to put some type of validity in. And it just shows how far we're off track and how angry the debate has become in a country that is divided, in a country that is divided along not only religious lines, but also racial lines, and even ideologically, we're divided. We are a divided country. And we don't even know how to have the conversation. We don't even know how to come back together and begin to talk about these difficult issues that we face. You know, people talk about ISIS, and you know, I said it last night. I think might have said it on the last show. I'm not afraid of ISIS. I'm afraid of the cop that's gonna pull me over when I go home and go upside my head and maybe kill me, maybe shoot me to death. You know, I'm more afraid of that than ISIS. We're spending billions and billions of dollars trying to bring freedom and democracy abroad, but yet and still we have those that are enslaved in here, and poor education and poverty and so forth. And we have domestic terrorism. And so listen, if you haven't listened to our last, my last episode, because DT wasn't here, it's still his episode. He's still got to take responsibility for it, even though he wasn't here. He's my partner in crime. If you haven't listened to it, it's called Who is the Threat? You need to go download that one and take a listen to it. But you know, America has given us promises. America has given us promises. Even when you have someone that has worked their way but we want to say earn citizenship in this country. America has made certain promises. You heard in our intro coming in, Dr. King talked about these promises. Liberty, life, the pursuit of happiness is a promise. He talked about it as being a promissory note, a check that is insufficient. When one goes in to cash it, to take advantage of it, throughout history, these promises have only been for a few people. And if it wasn't for the federal government, folks, we wouldn't have access, meaning minorities would not have access to some of these promises. Well, you say, I don't know about that. Well, there was a time, okay, you know, we don't have to go way back, but there was a time when blacks had no rights. And then they became second class citizens. And then they didn't even have the right to vote. There was a time when women didn't have the right to vote until 1919, was when women had the right to vote. Right to vote is so important to be able to participate in one society, to be a participant. And furthermore, you have people that have felony convictions, folks, that have got out of prison, have served their time, and still can't vote. Yet still they can pay taxes, though. They can get a job. If they're fortunate enough to get a job, if the felony doesn't prevent them from getting a job, they can get a job and they can pay their taxes. So that means they can put money in the government. They can put money in the pockets of our politicians. They can even pay taxes for social services like the police officers. That's going to just jack them anyway and put them right back in there. Right. But, you know, I mean, they can provide monetarily to society, but they have no voice. Something's wrong with that, folks. Something's wrong with that. If I can pay my taxes, I should have the right to vote. You see, many of the battles have been waged over this extension of this right, from the 15th Amendment guaranteeing black men the franchise to the expansion of the vote to women in 1919, with the 19th Amendment to the reinforcement of the rights of all Americans, all African Americans, with the Voting Rights Act. I mean, voting is and again, you know, I'm gonna look at this in a dual way, because y'all know when I back up like that, I think y'all know who I'm coming for. I'm coming for black folks. I'm coming directly for y'all, because you know what? When I hear I was on the radio, I was on Perry Publishing and Broadcasting a few months ago, and a young man had called in. He said voting is pointless. I mean, I like how he said it, too, because he was like, pointless. I mean, he like had all the syllables going in there. I was like, and so I let the brother talk, and I said, man, you don't understand. You don't understand what the ballot did for minority people. If it wasn't for the ability to get to the polls, you probably wouldn't be able to call into this show and this network, which is owned by a black man. Okay. Pointless, you know, and there are those who are listening to me now. Okay. That don't vote. Shame on you. I'm just going to be honest. You need to exercise your right to vote. And you've heard this, and people say, well, you know, that was a long time ago. People died. People risk it all simply to cast a vote, simply to say that I am a member of this society, and I want to have a say so in what goes on. Now, I hear the critics, the Electoral College, our vote really doesn't count as Electoral College. Well, you know what? That in itself is a discussion, but that does not negate the fact that for you to not do your civic duty is dishonoring, not only to yourself, but to those who have paid the price. You know, today, the voting rights of minorities is under attack. In 2013, the Supreme Court overturned key elements of the Voting Rights Act, saying that states had historically discriminated against African-American voters were no longer required to seek federal approval before amending their laws, voting laws. Before that, they had to go to the federal government to say, we want to change this, we want to change that. The Supreme Court, folks, they shut that down. And then immediately, nine Southern GOP-dominated states moved to pass what? Voter ID bills and other measures that restrict the right to vote. Now, the Republicans will say because of voter fraud. There is no voter fraud. I mean, prove to me that there's voter fraud. We don't even have enough voter turnout to have voter fraud. I mean, it's ridiculous. What it is because this affects, get this, black and brown people. Okay. You need an ID. You need a registration card. Okay. It affects black and brown people. And then black and brown people vote what? You said it right, Democrat. You said it right. They do. What was poll taxes for? What was reciting the Constitution for? What was these IQ tests for? They were to restrict your right to vote. So in the 21st century, we still have these barriers to voting. I mean, I don't know. I'm in Oklahoma now, and I had to get a voter ID card. I'm like, voter ID? What do you mean? I got my driver's license. No, you need a voter ID card. And and I sent away for it, and it takes some time for it to come. Now, if I wasn't really serious about voting, I might just forget about it and say whatever. Then all of a sudden, and also what I would say is, and here in Oklahoma, there's a cutoff. You have to register, I think it's a couple of weeks or whatever before in order to vote. And Wisconsin, it's same day registration. I walk up with my driver's license and I vote. I just vote right away. I mean, if we want to encourage voting, why do we have these measures in place to discourage people? I mean, why don't we have voting on the weekend? Why do we have voting during the week? Why is it on a Tuesday? You know, I don't even want to go to work on Monday. Let's keep it real. Tuesday, I'm trying to figure out why I am working. You know what I mean? I'm like, man, why am I doing this? Oh, okay, I got a mortgage. I had a car note. Okay, I get it, man, but I don't want it. You know, why is it on a Tuesday? Why is it not on a Saturday or something? Well, the majority of us are off, and you can have like 90%. Why? Because, get this, they don't want you to vote. They know that the people that are making decent money, okay, living in the nicest neighborhoods, the most well-educated, are going to get out and vote. And that's going to maintain the status quo. That means nothing's going to change for you and nothing's going to change for them. And what do we need in this country more than anything? We need change. So this country has promised us the right to have a say-so in our society. And I will say to you today that in a democracy, it means that my voice and Richard's voice are equal. Nobody's voice, DT's voice, is equal. Nobody's voice is louder. But in our society, if you have wealth, if you have position, I won't even get into all these super PACs now that's supporting all these candidates that are pouring millions and millions and dollars into the campaign that is manipulating and influencing voters. Well, that's one or two people, the Koch brothers, one or two people that are influencing what? Thousands of people because they have money. Now, does my vote count as much as their influence? Absolutely not. We have a problem. We have a problem when it comes to voting in this country. And we have a problem because of apathy on the part of minority peoples. All you have to do is look at the turnout. It's dismal. It's dismal even for the general election. If you look at turnout for interim elections, oh, my God. I mean, how can somebody win by, you know, 100-some votes to 80-something votes, you know? I mean, nobody's going to the polls. America has made a promise that all of our voices will be heard equally. Also, America has made another promise. America has promised us all a quality education. Yeah, America has promised us all a quality education. But I would be remiss if I didn't go down memory lane. And the fact that at one time, if you were not in the dominant culture, you could not even go to school. I mean, the Little Rock Nine. Let's look at James Meredith. Let's look at folks that that had to break the barrier, had to challenge the existing laws of Jim Crow in the South, and even Jim Crowism, de facto segregation in the North. So there was a struggle. Again, you remember I said if it had not been for the federal government coming in and forcing these things, it would never happen. I'm going somewhere with that before the show is over with. So there was a time. There was a history. America said education, quality education for everyone was not true. And when Dr. King stood on those steps and gave that I Have a Dream speech, which he had given multiple times, some people think he had just given it that time. He had given it multiple times. But for the nation to hear it and to understand what he was talking about is that this promise you promised, this is in your founding documents. This is what you said this. Yet we look around today. I can drive through any inner city schools system. I don't care where I'm at. I can drive through it. I'm like, man, is this just getting them prepared for prison? It even looks like a prison. You know what I mean? You walk through, there's metal detectors, there's police officers, there's I mean, when I go to the county jail, what do I see? Metal detectors, police officers. Okay, I mean, what are we doing? Do we consider that a quality education? Oh, but we got to keep them safe. Keep them safe from what? Keep them safe from what? Why has school become a dangerous environment? I thought school was supposed to be a learning environment. But I can go through affluent neighborhoods, and I don't walk through a metal detector. Half the time, I don't even buzz the door to get in. I just walk right in. But there is no equal education system in America. There is none. Okay. If you're a parent and you have your kids in a decent school, you know what? You're very fortunate. Because there are, man, some of these schools. And some of you don't get what I'm saying because you don't walk through these schools. I walk through these schools. I mentor in these schools. And what I'm telling you is, it's a difficult environment to even spend a little time in, let alone be a student or to be a teacher. Trying to teach kids in these environments. There is not. Teachers that work in affluent neighborhoods get paid more money than teachers that work in the hood, if you want to say that. The pay is not even equal. I don't understand. America has made a promise, and just because my child happens to be in a A school or B school, shouldn't I want that for somebody else's child? But you know, America's promise, I guess, is only for those the privilege, only for those. And I'm not just talking about white people. Okay, that's not what I'm just talking about. There's some black middle class folks that you would never thought they grew up in inner city, because they're running around here demonizing people that are still struggling, people that are still in poverty. They're demonizing them just like they never experienced anything like it. You know who I'm talking about. You can point them out. You know, those are the people that want you to somehow fix yourself because they fix themselves, right? That's the lie, that they got to where they were simply because they were great. They had determination. Well, you know what? If being great and determination was all it took to improve your life, then I think everybody, the dope dealer's got determination. Okay. He got creativity. I mean, the dope, you know what I'm saying? He's got talent. Okay. No, it takes more than that. It takes more than that, folks. And this thing about education, I don't care even if you don't have any kids. Where's the federal government? Where's the federal government? This government that came in and ensured that blacks could enter into the school system. Where is this federal government? Well, let me tell you where this federal government is. This federal government is the one that created this No Child Left Behind that leaves 90% of the children behind. That's where this federal government is. This federal government is absent from the equation now. The federal government is spending more money outside the country than it is inside the country. Why the social structure and the, guess what, the infrastructure, not just the social structure, but the infrastructure is collapsing. We're spending billions of dollars to bring democracy and freedom to others while we neglect the home. Listen, folks, we're going to be back here shortly. Don't go anywhere. I know we're talking kind of tough. When DT get back, we're going to get on a lighter note. But I don't know. He might continue in the same vein. So I don't I don't know. But I know he's going to listen to the shows while he's gone. So he might get a one way ticket right back. But listen, you know, we got serious issues going on in our country. We have promises that I think are yet to come true for so many of us. And we want to continue this dialogue. Don't go anywhere. Sip a little something, and we will be right back.
Be sure to like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Follow all of our content on the OneMicOneVoice.com website, or be sure to email me at DT@OneMicOneVoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at OneMicOneVoice.com. Keep listening.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious. Yeah, America, you have made promises. And you know, I just want to just, you know, deviate just for a moment, and I'm gonna come back to that, but I gotta talk about what's going on with our Muslim brothers and sisters. And I don't understand how we can as American, as a country of immigrants. Columbus, okay, number one, Columbus is not no hero. Okay. Columbus, how do you just like get lost and find a country and all of a sudden now we celebrate you getting lost? Because Columbus wasn't a navigator, okay? He got lost. And how do you discover a country that people already live in here? That's what listen, folks, get away from this lie, okay? Get Columbus out of tell the story right. He got lost, okay? And the diseases that they wreak havoc on the natives of this country. We need to tell the truth, folks. And the reality is, listen, we are all immigrants. Now, let me change that, because black folks, we was actually brought here on slave ships, right? Oh, yeah, okay, so I messed up on that one. There are people that are immigrants that came here because they wanted to come here. Black people, Africans, we didn't want to come here. Now, don't get me wrong. There's folks that want to come here now, but initially, okay, they were sold into slavery by other Africans. I'm gonna tell the truth. No European white man went on a continent and took any African off himself. They were sold by other Africans. Okay, that's the truth. Now, the reality is, this is not taught. Okay, so yes, black people sold black people to white people. Just the way it worked. Came over here forcibly. So if anybody should be upset about immigration, it should be black people. Hold on. You forced me to come here. But this reality that somehow we can close our borders or we can determine who can come in. I heard a guy on CNN, Richard, say, the most important thing is keeping Americans safe. And he went on to talk about how, you know, Ted Cruz was talking about if we need to carpet bomb ISIS and how collateral damage, if they're living among civilians, that's okay because it's acceptable within collateral damage. Let me say this to you. America is a country with boundaries. Humanity is boundless. And what unites us is not the fact that I'm an American or that this person over here may be British or English or Welsh. What unites us is that we are human. And the very fragment of us being human means that one life, folks, regardless of whether that life lives in America or that life lives in Iraq, that life has the same value. It's called being human. And how dare we as American seem how you can place an American's life above anyone else's life? This is ridiculous. This nationalistic way of talking about America, I'm talking about life. That little boy that's in North Korea, that baby boy that's in North Korea, his life is just as precious as a baby being born in Deaconess Hospital here, Mount Sinai Hospital, where I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just as precious. How dare we devalue life? And that's what this conversation is about, Richard. It's about devaluing Muslims. It's about throwing them all in the same baskets because of the psychotic killers out here. Okay. Let's take the same rhetoric and let's put it on people that look like Dylann Roof. Oh, that's a problem. Oh, wow. So I'm going to demonize all white people now? I'm going to throw them all in the same basket? Okay. Last time I looked up, the KKK looked like who? They don't look like me. So why don't I throw? Why don't we throw everybody in that same basket? Don't you see how wrong that is? That is foolish. That is foolish. We cannot do that. We cannot determine based upon one's race or religion whether or not you can come in this country. Yes, I agree. We need to screen. You guys heard me say the problem is with visas. We need to do better screening. You know, that if we can find out that these people are ISIS sympathizers or they're radicalized, I'm still trying to figure out what that means, people being radicalized, but that's a whole nother conversation, I guess. If we can, the dude in what was that, San Bernardino, California, he was born here. He's American. He's American. So how would we stop him from coming in? Oh, we couldn't because he was born here. Oh, okay. Don't work. Doesn't work. Folks, listen, this is racism. Okay. It's racism to sit up and say, you're not allowed in this country because you are a Muslim. It's the same thing we did to the Jews. It's the same thing we did to the Japanese. It's the same thing we've done. Same thing we did when we tried to Americanize the native people. It's the same thing we did. This is racism. It's bigotry. Call it what it is. Don't say, well, you know, the main thing is to keep America safe. No. The main thing is to deal with people with respect and dignity. And to deal with people in a way that you would want to be dealt with. That's what this is about. And if I'm fleeing a country, how dare you tell me I can't come in because I'm black or because I'm a Christian? I mean, again, going back to KKK, they Christians. I mean, they burning a cross, right? Big cross, too. I mean, you know, all night long, bonfire. Yeah, okay. I don't see we kicking them out. I'm more afraid of them than I am ISIS. I know I'm deviating from it, but folks, listen, this is prejudice, it's racism, it's bigotry. And we have a history of racism and bigotry. This feeds into the very fabric of our country. I know a lot of you don't like to hear that, but that's what's happening. We can't demonize people because of their religion. We have freedom of religion in this country. People travel across borders. It's just travel. Everybody that comes in this country doesn't want to harm people. And you can't say because you're a Muslim, you want to harm people. When we got people here that are not Muslim, every day that's harming people. 355, okay, mass shootings last year. How many of those were done by Muslims? Oh, wow. Yeah. You need to listen to who's the threat. I'm telling you, it's something else. I'm, you know, we looking at the wrong target. Somebody got to help me out here because I'm here to tell. I need DT because DT would come in and put us in the right frame of mind. Maybe my frame of mind ain't right, Richard. But you know what? I don't want to live in a country where we espouse these values. And then the reality is we throw them under the rug whenever we're fearful, because this is fear. This is fear that the Donald Trump, the man that says he's going to do all this, and, you know, he's going to make Mexico pay for it. And he's going to do this. Man is afraid to let people in the country. I mean, but he's this macho dude that's going, he going to go and he's going to deal with world leaders, but he's afraid to let people in. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid, folks. What I'm afraid of, again, let me get back to it. I'm afraid of somebody racial profiling me and blowing my brains out. That's what I'm afraid of. Why? Because that's the reality. Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the reality. has happened too many times, too often in this country. I was just looking at the Jordan Davis story, the documentary on TV, and how he and if you don't know this, he was in the one in Florida where the young teenagers had their music up, and the white male pulled next with his fiance and told them to turn it down, and they did, and Jordan said, "Man, turn that music up," and you know, they got into a little something, you know, verbal altercation. And he said, of course, you know, he saw a shotgun, and then he started shooting in the car. And even when they threw it in reverse to try to get away, he was still shooting at him. And of course, you know, Florida has a stand my ground law. But it didn't work too well for him. Because he's, like, not getting out ever again because he murdered that young man. So getting back, who is the threat? Now, America, you have promised us freedom of speech. See, I'm on the mic right now. One mic, one voice. But see, I can do this here. And you can tune me in or tune me out. But do we truly have freedom of speech? And let me put this together, freedom of assembly. In other words, America says you can say what you want to say. We'll respect that. Might not agree with you all the time, but we're going to respect it. We're going to listen to it. And you can gather together. You can protest peacefully. We're not going to hurt you over that. Okay, but is that really true? Is that really true? Because we see what's happening to the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, see, the Black Lives Matter movement makes people uncomfortable. Because the norm in this society is you stay away from that sort of thing. Now, you don't talk about that sort of thing. And if you talk about it that all lives matter. Now, don't you say. And I've heard people say, man, don't. Now, don't say Black Lives Matter. What's wrong? No, don't. People don't, you know, they get uncomfortable with Black lives. But I'm living Black life. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're not living Black life, but you uncomfortable with Black. I'm living Black life. If you uncomfortable, what do you think I am? Okay, I'm living Black life. Listen, this is the area of tension that brings growth. If we truly want to grow in this country, if we truly want to coexist, get rid of the word tolerance or tolerate each other. I don't like that phrase. We need to have tolerance. I don't want you to tolerate me. I don't want to tolerate you. I want us to coexist. You see, tolerate. What does that mean? Well, we have tolerance here. What's that? I walk in a room and you got tolerance. Yeah, something wrong with that. No. I walk in a room just like everybody else. I want to coexist with you. I don't want you to tolerate me. I don't want to tolerate you. Let's coexist together because we're human, right? We're human. But in this area of tension, when I say Black Lives Matter, you say, oh, wow. Okay, so what does that mean? How does that make you feel? And, you know, I believe, and I said this last night at the forum, I believe that those people, because it's not everybody, but the individuals in our society that it bothers them or it makes them uncomfortable or they're less secure about that statement. They can't even identify why. They couldn't tell you. They couldn't articulate it to you. I mean, they might say something like, well, I just believe all lives matter. Well, you know, and the reply from folks on the other side is, yeah, we believe that, too. So, but what do you have a problem about? They can't articulate it because they have been brought up. They have been taught this, that never can you place minority life above white life. Can't do it. Can't do it. That's why people are uncomfortable with a black boss. I met with a guy today that said that he was in the Navy in the 60s, and he got promoted to the leading petty officer. Some of y'all Navy folks know what I'm talking about. I'm a Navy man, by the way, 13 years, United States Navy. And he talked about how they basically, he said when he, matter of fact, he tells the story that when he showed up to a new command and they were at quarters in the morning, and the chief came out and said, we have a new leading petty officer. And he said his name. And when he looked at him and he said, you're such and such. He says, yeah. He said, oh, no. He said, oh, no, that will not happen. OK. Listen, it's the same reason. It's the same reason why you feel sometimes when you look at a minority person. And they seem to be doing better off. They probably not. I mean, materialism is the most deceitful, I think, measure of a person doing well anyway. But according to the world's standards, you look and you say, oh, that guy, he seems to be doing. But he's black. Okay, why could he be doing that? When I'm building my house, Richard, I can't tell you how many people said to me, what do you do for a living? I'm like. And I said to the last guy, I said, if one more person asks me what I do for a living, but do I have to be a drug dealer? I mean, do I have to be a gang banger or a hip hop artist or something? I just can't be a dude with a job, right? I mean, with an education, with a job, folks, get this. Education correlates with income. Go get an education. You're going to make more money. That's just the way it is. Okay. Got nothing to do with anything other than that. Okay. PSA announcement, get an education, you make more money. but this tension that's created, there's growth in that. If we can embrace that tension, just embrace it. Don't run from it. Don't be threatened by it. Embrace it and understand it. And those who do, whether you are black or brown or white or whatever you may be, if you embrace that intention, I guarantee you that tension, you will be better off as an individual. Because at the end of the day, what are we trying to do? We're trying to move things forward. I don't know anybody. Well, no, I heard people. Some just popped in my mind. Richard, take back my country. I remember that. Yeah. So some people want to go back. That's when I hear people say, you know, man, I can't, man, what happened to America? You know, with the good old days. I said, so when was that? Was that slavery? Convict leasing? Was that Jim Crowism? Is that mass incarceration? I'm just wondering, when was the good old days? I don't want to go back to nothing. I'm going to be honest with you. I hear people say, America's going to hell. I remember the good old days. I'm saying, well, when was that? When exactly was that? Because was that the time when I couldn't drink at the same fountain as other people? I had to go to a different bathroom. I couldn't stay in the same hotel. I had to go around the back to get food to eat. Was that then? Was that the good old day? Folks, understand what you're saying, okay? I don't want to go back to anything. Matter of fact, I don't think we've made enough progress in my lifetime when it comes to equaling the playing field. But freedom of speech, I am thankful. I'm going to say this. I am thankful for the One Mic, One Voice show. I am thankful for technology. I am thankful for a platform that in this country, there are countries where you can't do this. And this is, let me just say another thing too. Just because I'm being critical of the country I live in, okay, doesn't mean I hate America. See, I mean, if I have a problem with America, I talk about that problem. I don't hate America. I love America. I've lived overseas, folks. In my opinion, there's no finer place to live. I'm not trying to get out of America. I'm trying to help fix America. America has made promises. America has benefited off of these false promises. And people continue to benefit off these false promises. Doesn't mean I hate America. I love America, man. I mean, America's great country, man. I mean, I'm the first one. I've traveled overseas. I lived overseas. I love going abroad, but man, it's something about coming back home. I love America. That's why I served her. Served America 13 years. Okay. So you can say what you want to say. You can, say I'm an anti-American, all this other kind of stuff. No, I'm not. I love America. However, America, you need to understand that there is an accountability that comes along with, quote unquote, the things that you call yourself to be. The beacon, the light, the city on the hill, America, the land of the free, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No place in the world like America. Yeah, that's what you claim to be. But let me go to the south side of Chicago and see what that America looks like. Okay. Let me go to Nichols Hills in Oklahoma and see what that America looks like. Two different Americas. Now, is a promise only for Nichols Hills? Or is a promise for Ingleside, south side of Chicago? It's the same promise, right? Okay. Listen, I didn't create a country. I'm just a citizen. And folks, why is this discussion so important? I'm glad you asked that question, because we are in my opinion, again, I'm not a political historian, but I will say we are in the most dysfunctional election cycle in my existence on the planet. A political historian probably can correct me on this. And I know that the conversation has been, it's visceral. I understand that. And I heard that, somebody last night said in the Republican debate that they were going to punch Putin in the mouth. I thought, okay, not that may be cool until you become president. And you have to entertain Putin. And Putin sit down. And Putin just thinking like, man, this dude said he's going to punch me in my mouth. I mean, does he bring that up? He said, well, when you were campaigning, you said you was going to, bust me in the grill. So what's up? What's going on? Oh, no, that was just rhetoric. No, I didn't mean that. But trust me on everything else. what happened to statesmanship? I mean, what happened to... I just don't see, I see a disqualification on the international level. So if quote unquote America wants to lead, first of all, you have to lead domestically. You have to lead in your own country. You can't fulfill the promises to your own citizens. The world is looking at you. And the world is recognizing your broken promises to your citizens. Until you can fulfill your promises, until Congress, until integrity comes back to the halls of Congress and the White House, until true integrity comes back and the ability to work together, until that returns, we will continue to be a dysfunctional country. We will continue to say that we fulfill these promises, but everyone knows the difference. Well, let me back up. That's what Trump would say. Everybody knows. Not everybody, because some people think the promises, you know, some people, you know, we had somebody last night that says, you know, until she really got out in the world and start to see how things were going, when she would hear people talk about, you know, like Black Lives or some type of movement, that it she was like, why? Because everybody's treated equal. Everybody. She didn't know. So there are people that don't understand, that are totally out of the know of what's happening in our country. Folks, I don't know. I don't know. I do know I can't cash that check. That's what I do know. So I ain't going to even take it to the bank, because they're going to be looking at me like, you the second Black guy that came in here today. They handed these out again. They didn't work before. We can do better. We can do better, America. But it begins with you and I. It begins with our dialogue. It begins with our interaction between one another. Are you going to treat me the same way that you're going to be treated, regardless of my color of my skin, regardless of my education, regardless of my socioeconomic status? Are you going to treat me as an equal? Even though you may be in the privileged class, are you going to step out of the privileged class? Or are you going to pull me to the privileged class? Are you going to step out or pull me? Something's got to happen, because you can't stay privileged and me be underprivileged. You can't do that. Doesn't work that way. That's not equality. Okay. Wow. America's broken promises. But there's some good. Let me end on a positive note. Okay, I'm just going. Now, let me end on a positive note. Listen, folks, we do have a lot to be thankful for. And although I think many of us in this country live under a certain level of stress, a certain level of paranoia, if I could say that, but we have a lot to be thankful for, because we have friends, we have family, we have health and strength, we have employment. We have a lot to be thankful for. And at the end of the day, I guess I could say what truly matters is not what people do for you, but what you do for others. Because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes. History will speak of us.